Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
Welcome back to Overnight America. I am your host, Ryan Recker. Hour number two here in... Thank you for hanging out with us tonight. Our guest this half hour, someone I've been looking forward to talking with, is Dr. Bruce Hartman. He's the author of the new book, Your Faith Has Made You Well, A Radical New Way to Create Peace and Hope. His website, brucelhartman.com. You can check him out on there. Dr. Bruce Hartman, thank you for coming on to KMOX.
Well, thank you for having me, Ryan.
I appreciate the time. I notice a lot of things go on in the world today. Religious freedom's a very important thing, and it was something that was on a lot of people's mind during the 2016 election. They didn't exactly know which way it would go, considering if Hillary Clinton was going to go into office. A lot of people thought that religious freedoms would be taking a backseat to a lot of other different big buzzwords and topics that were going on. President Trump ends up winning. I just wanted at first, maybe at the start of the interview here, get your impressions on how you think religious freedom has gotten better or worse in the last couple of years under the Trump administration.
Well, I would say it's been neutral in this sense. I think that the Trump administration and President Trump himself understands the importance of religious freedom. I think the other side of this argument is wherever they can, the Democrats are pushing back against it. And not just the Democrats, but the sense of political correctness and identity politics are hurting religious freedom as well.
Yeah, you find that it's like second to whatever the other thing is that they're fighting for. So religious freedoms are not as important.
Right.
Yeah, and your book's interesting. It's called Your Faith Has Made You Well, A Radical New Way to Create Peace and Hope. How about we talk about your book? What kind of things do you write about?
Well, I was in the business world for 30 years. I was CFO for Foot Locker and Yankee Candle. And about 10 years ago, I quit the workplace and went to theological schools. Took me 3 years to get a master's degree and then another 4 years to get my doctorate degree. And one of the things that I found while I was in there, which actually kind of surprised me, that I had an appreciation for faith and how it could help people and how it could be very pastoral for people. So I've written a couple of books, but this latest one of the things I noticed was a lot of people have a different relationship with God than I think God would want. Mm. And it goes something like this. They get in trouble and they pray to God. Now, imagine, Ryan, you have a friend that only comes to see you when he's in trouble. You know, what we're all looking for, and God certainly is trying to develop this with us, is that our faith is continuous and it's consistent. It's not just when we get in trouble. So that's one of the reasons why I wrote this book. And the second thing I noticed, particularly during my studies, is eight times Jesus says in the Gospels, your faith has made you well, to eight different people. Now, when you see something like that, whether it's in school or it's at work, and particularly when it's in the Bible, it means something very important. And what it means in the Bible, is relationship to the Bible, is that we are healed with our faith in conjunction with our belief in the power of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And I'm not sure everybody really got that message in Sunday school. So that's why I wrote this book. And one of the things I did was, I interviewed a lot of folks, and most of these interviews are in the book, about how they developed their faith life and how important it was for them. And one of the things that I saw was this constant, consistent connection in belief in Jesus, and that it wasn't just a sometimes thing. Mm. And so that's essentially what the book is how to do that, what faith is and the different types of faith. So, for instance, there's this story about this paralytic that kept going to the pool. This is in chapter 5, John chapter 5. He's going to the pool for 38 years. And Jesus comes up to him and says, do you want to be well? So if we think about that, would you do something, Ryan, for 38 years and have it not work before you would do something different? So, and that's part of the story of faith is sometimes it isn't a miracle. Sometimes it's just changing our attitude and how we think about our faith.
Dr. Bruce Hartman joining us here on Overnight America. When you were CFO of those large companies like Foot Locker, what was your faith like? Or was it wasn't until after you left those positions that you started to grow deeper in it?
After I left, it certainly grew much deeper. I think like a lot of folks who change careers midstream, you know, there's a personal crisis that goes with it. You know, particularly when you're the CFO of Fortune 500 companies, your days are very busy and you start to lose contact with what your true beliefs were in life. And, you know, near the end of my stay after my second year as CFO at Yankee Candle, I felt like I was losing grip on, to me, what was the most important thing, which was my faith. Mm-hmm. So out of that personal crisis, I left the business world.
Yeah, it's hard to do sometimes. You're in a position that you've worked hard to get to. Things are going really well, and all of a sudden you realize there's a conflict with your faith, with the things that you believe in, and then you're kind of at a crossroads. You know, it's something you've been praying on, which is maybe you want another opportunity, and then if it presents yourself, then you're either thinking to yourself, okay, it might not have the same prestige, it might not have the same salary, it might not have the same lifestyle, but this is what I prayed on. So you're conflicted, right? Some people go through those things. I've talked to a lot of people that had those moments where they realized there's been a lot of issues with their life. They pray on these things and they say, I want to fix this. And then an answer comes to them, but it doesn't have the same salary. It doesn't have the same status.
Right.
And then they say, well, I don't want to give those things up. So then they realize very quickly that they put other things above their faith. And that's, you know, a decision that they decided to make. You know, it's an interesting thing. You decided to follow that. That's a good thing.
Right. I think the more successful you are, the harder it is to make this turn that you just talked about.
Yeah.
And it really takes an existential crisis. And how you think about it. And I know that it's God pushing you to be confused, but pushing you along the way because, you know, he will not be resisted. And that is the one lesson I learned from that. And I have to be honest with you, I don't regret. I mean, there's certainly some days I wish I was back in the business world, but they're very few and far between. I'm certainly very happy doing what I'm doing right now.
Probably when you're sitting down eating a $50, $100 steak, you're thinking, it'd be nice if someone else paid for this in the business world. Those are the moments, you know, the paid lunches and things. All right, you know, after the break, if you don't mind holding on, the thing that really grabbed my attention when the Booker messaged me basically was talking about recognizing ethical veganism as a religion. I wanted to talk to you about how some people treat things, worldly things, as religions and people wanting to recognize those things as religions. So do you mind if we talk about that when we come back from the break?
Absolutely right.
Perfect. Dr. Bruce Hartman is the author of the new book, Your Faith Has Made You Well, A Radical New Way to Create Peace and Hope. We'll continue our conversation with him next on Overnight America, KMOX.
Listening to KMOX has never been easier.
Siri, play KMOX.
Our guest for this segment, Dr. Bruce Hartman, he's a political and religion author. He's got a book called Your Faith Has Made You Well, A Radical New Way to Create Peace and Hope. And you can check him out online if you want to go to his website, brucelhartman.com. Dr. Bruce Hartman, thank you for sticking around on KMOX.
Oh, you're welcome, Ryan.
This is an interesting article. The Daily Mail put one on about it. And this is the thing that really grabbed my attention, was the idea of categorizing ethical veganism as a religion, because there is a legal battle onto that. They say that ethical veganism qualifies under the Equality Act of 2010. You see a lot of people claim certain things to be religions. I'm curious what your take is on that.
Well, your first question to me was about how do I see religious freedom?
Yeah.
With under the new Trump administration, and so this is part of a thing that is working against the activities of President Trump in terms of giving us more presidential freedom, religious freedom. So if this goes through, this is not religion, what this gentleman's proclaiming. Mm-hmm. And if you go to Webster's Dictionary and they talk about what is the definition of religion, it's an adherence to a practice, sometimes a rigid practice, that has a belief in a supreme being.
Mm-hmm.
That's the definition of Webster's Dictionary. And I think most of us could share that that's the common sense view.
Mm-hmm.
So religion isn't believing in yoga. It isn't believing in I can have ice cream every single night of the week. That's my religion.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly isn't in vegan.
Yeah.
And the reason why I get concerned about this is if this goes through, it dilutes the value of the other great world religions, notably Christianity.
Yeah, you know, we have words for that. Idolatry, when you start to worship
right. Veganism,
you know, yourself. And that's the thing, you know, everything's worldly anymore. People look at things of the world, you know, and in particular, you could call it idolatry. You know, when you think idolatry, you think, oh, yeah, you go into your house and there's these little wooden statues that you pray to. No. You know, you're looking at a very narrow idea of what idolatry is. If you're out there worshiping the idea that, you know, veganism, you know, that's idolatry, too.
Absolutely. And that's really well said. And it reminds me of the struggle that the early Israelites had with Baal and some of the idols, you know, the folks that were with Moses in the desert, you know, they had that golden calf. Mm-hmm. And so this is what concerns me is understanding what we are worshiping.
Mm-hmm.
And worshiping a vegan life practice isn't the same as having a relationship with God.
Yeah. You know, Dr. Bruce Hartman joining us, the website brucelhartman.com. And you find, too, that there's always these states that have these different issues that may conflict with what the federal regulations are. You know, I lived in Indiana up until 2016. I moved here to St. Louis in 2017 when Governor Mike Pence at the time, he took a lot of heat for RFRA, which is the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. It was basically mimicking what the federal guidelines were under President Bill Clinton. But you see a lot of times you go into these states and the ones that mostly on the different coasts, the West Coast, East Coast, they get a little bit more relaxed for this sort of thing. And they find that, you know, deeply held religious beliefs are only secondary to, you know, fill in the blank, whatever, you know, the popular trend is online. And they always make it so that your religious beliefs connect, you know, if there is ever a conflict with someone else's freedoms, whatever they may be, your religious beliefs are something that is not important. In fact, you have to almost, I don't want to use the term bow down, but you almost have to submit to what other people believe on things if it's, you're coming at it from a religious perspective. And that's the thing that's always scared me. And I think that's why a lot of people reacted to a Donald Trump, because they saw, okay, maybe if you were forced to pick between the two people here, we're going to see one that's going to go down that path where they continue on that path. And then you look at the other path and you say, at least there's someone there that may be able to stand up for some of these deeply held religious beliefs. And, you know, there may be a stopgap there. And the thing I'm concerned with, and maybe the thing I'm trying to get to here in the point, in the future, do you think there's going to be more pushing back, or do you think this is almost a lost cause? Do you feel like the activism is going to win in the end?
No, I don't think I think the activism has gotten so ridiculous. And, you know, when we're talking about a vegan declaring a religious belief, at some point it gets so bizarre and so absurd that the pendulum starts to swing the other way. And I think you're going to see that, particularly in 2020 with this next election. Mm-hmm. There's a large swath of independents that are moving away from the left. And not that they're necessarily going to be conservative, but they're seeing some of the silliness of this, and they're going to vote more in line with, I think, the direction that you and I would like the country to go, which is, you know, religious tolerance, but not religious silliness.
Yeah. What version of the Bible do you take to church?
I use the Revised version of the Bible.
Any reason why you picked that one?
Well, you know, first, it's interesting because it was given to me in the 50s when I was first going to to church. And then the other reason for it, which I didn't discover until I went to school, it's the least agended Bible. Mm. So in other words, when they translate from Greek into English or Hebrew into English, you know, there's always a certain amount of agenda to the Bible. That's why there's so many different versions. But the whether it's the New Revised Standard Version or the Revised Standard Version, scholars believe that that's the most accurate in terms of its translation.
Yeah.
So whether that's true or not, I don't know, but that's what I was informed, and I see that too in some of the translations.
Dr. Bruce Hartman joining us in his website, brucelhartman.com. He's a Christian author and storyteller. I'm curious, do you have any fears when it comes to our society in the future?
I'm actually hopeful. One of the things I learned in business about change, and you see this in the Bible as well, when things get really bad is when they start to get good. And I used to always tell the folks that worked for me, when you hear the naysayers clucking the loudest and starting to use slander and crazy things, that's when you know you're starting to make progress. Hmm. And it's true with God as well. You know, we get to these tipping points, and they start to swing the other way. And that's one of the realities of society, is these pendulums swing one way, and then they come back way past center and go the other way. And I think we're going to be having a revival of Christian thought, because it has gotten so bizarre that the silent people are going to start reacting to it. And I think you're going to see this in the next election. At least that's my hope. I do tend to be optimistic, but what's going on right now in our country is not good.
Yeah, and this is part of what we see, too, in the current trends. And it's an encouraging trend, which is people are more willing to express their beliefs verbally. They're willing to say it out loud. It's not just going online and, you know, posting something snarky on Facebook anymore. People are willing to, you know, express what they believe, and they're able to discuss the things they believe in, too, which is good. Because a lot of times people thought, well, you got to be polite. You just got to sit back. You can't say anything. We'll just keep it to myself. People are, I think, are a little bit more willing to let them know where they stand anymore, in a good way, I think, at least.
No, you're right. When people tell me that you can't say that on Christmas during the holidays, it's only going to make me want to say it more. And when I was in the business, in the workplace, I always had a Bible around me on my desk. And one of the senior people from HR came into my office one day and said it was against the policy to put my Bible on my desk. So because I was in a fairly high position, you know, I was able to confront her and say, no, now this is going on the right corner of my desk. And by the way, people trust me more because we are Christian. Mm-hmm. So we do need to speak up more, I think. If I have one criticism of Christians, is we do need to speak up more humbly, sincerely, and politely. But we do need to say Merry Christmas. It's okay to say it.
All right. So if people go to your website, brucelhartman.com, they can find your books on there. You got multiple books, but your latest one is out, which is called Your Faith Has Made You Well. What can they find on your website, and what's the best way for them to contact you if they got any questions?
Well, certainly go to the website. We also do, we're on all four of the major social media sites. And we also do three times a week, we do a blog on various religious issues and human interest stories that are tied to Christianity. And you can sign up for our mailing list there as well.
Yeah, I've been watching the loop of your video on your websites for the past half hour, so I feel like I may have it memorized at this point. You're very good at putting your glasses on. It shows the nice little scene of that in there. And it looks very peaceful. I don't know where they were recording these things, but you got some nice rocking chairs, a very peaceful background. I don't know if that's like a place close to where you live, or maybe that's your house. I don't know.
No, that's, I'm sure you've heard of the Cove, the Billy Graham retreat center.
Oh, sure. That's where that's at.
Yes, it's on the back porch looking out at the mountains.
Oh, that's perfect. Wow, how peaceful, right? A little spot like that.
Very nice.
All right, so brucelhartman.com is the website. Dr. Bruce Hartman, thank you so much for coming on, spending some time with us on Overnight America.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Ryan, and God bless.
God bless. That's awesome. And he joins us on the TDK Technologies guest line. And we're going to post that interview up online. If you go to KMOX.com/ONA after the hour, we get him up on the podcast. If there's something you heard in that and you enjoyed it, it's really easy for you to share it with a friend. Just go online and, you know, hey, take a little, press a button. Hey, share it on social media. It's Overnight America, KMOX.
News Radio 1120, KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals. This is Overnight America, sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com on KMOX.
Sometimes the favorite article of the year comes out at the end of the year, and this one certainly came out at the end of the year. This is my favorite story. It happened on an antique roadshow. I think this is over in the BBC, so it wasn't the antique roadshow you'd watch here in the United States, and I'm a fan of those shows. I like watching it. I like the little sound effect they play, and it shows the price on the bottom. I like it all. My wife, she'll roll her eyes. Oh, you're watching Antique Roadshow. What are you, 90? No, I just like watching what the people bring in. And then the experts come out and they got their little pens and their sticks and their, you know, laser pointers. And as you can see over here, if we look at the stitching and if we turn this around over here, we can see what it's done over here. And that indicates this. And I saw this at auction and this. Wouldn't that be a fun life to go to auctions like all the time? And you're like, oh, I need to figure out how much something goes at an auction. But Antique Roadshow, a couple of years back, 2016, had a very unique item that came in. It was a 180-year-old bottle of wine. So the person finds it. Apparently, they were redoing their house or whatever it was, and they find this intact 180-year-old bottle of wine. So the Antique Roadshow took a look. Producer Mike, you'll love this. This is so great. I hope you haven't heard this story. Oh, you'll love this. Yeah, did you see it online? Ah. So what they decide to do is take it in. They think it may be worth some money, 180-year-old bottle of wine. So they bring it into the expert, and the experts look at it, and it's, oh, this is a very fine specimen. Oh, this might be worth a lot of money. You might be able to do this and do that. Oh, so they, you know, they insert a syringe into the bottle's cork. And then they draw some little bit of wine out because the person says, oh, I'll be able to taste it and tell you what kind of wine I think it is. So they tried a little bit. They said, I think it's a port. Yes, it's a port or a red wine. It tastes a little rusty. It might have some nails or something. And there's a little bit of rust taste to it, but it's definitely a port or a red wine. And they're so excited. You know, wine experts go crazy. There's certain people that go to Aldi and pick up Boone's Farms or whatever. And then there's some people that are into the very expensive, oh, this is a very rare bottle of wine. People will put entire wine cellars into their home. They'll buy different fridges made specifically for bottles of wine. People go crazy for wine. And here you are sitting around with your boxed wine on your countertop. We're talking about highly sophisticated 180-year-old bottles of wine. These are what the experts indulge themselves in. If you got some money, this is the way you show off your wealth. Bottles of wine that way. And as they get to it, it dates back to the 1840s, and they go and get it tested. And this is back in 2016. Well, the results are in. The 180-year-old bottle of wine was not wine at all. It was a bottle of urine. Oh, how would you like to be the expert that took a swig of that? 180-year-old urine. They said they found some rusty nails inside. They find also a little other things in there, a hair. They call it a witch's bottle. So buried in the threshold of the house, they say that it could help when it comes to witchcraft. Against curses or misfortune. That was how they protected themselves. They urinated inside of a wine bottle and put it underneath their house. That's how they protect themselves. What's the logic in that? What? Why? What? How does that protect you from anything? Who do you feel bad about? Like, let's say, who's the biggest loser in this story? Honestly, who's the biggest loser? The people that found this bottle of wine thinking that they had a giant, a huge money money ball in their hand. They thought they were coming in with what could be the most valuable bottle of wine in the world, 180 years old. That doesn't exist anymore, right? Oh, there's going to be some millionaire that wants to buy this. That, or the expert that took a taste of it. Yeah. So terrible. Oh, man. 314-436-7900. That's my favorite story of the year. Antique Roadshow expert drank urine thinking it was wine. Here's another story. I got a whole bunch of stories here. And I don't know if it'll ever beat that one. You see over at KMOX.com, St. Louis is as hip as it gets among the 25 best places to see in 2020, according to Forbes. Yeah, Forbes did this one. It's not some no-name, WeRankCities.biz. You know, some weird websites that do that just for the sake of publicity. It's actually Forbes that did. You know, people actually pay attention to Forbes. St. Louis has been named among ski resorts, tropical islands, picturesque national parks, in some of America's biggest cities, as one of the 25 best places to visit in 2020. St. Louis is, quote, as vibrant, diverse, and hip as it gets. And if that's surprising, stop in next time you're flying from New York to L.A. You think we're going to get a lot of layover people? Oh, let's spend a day in St. Louis. Probably not, right? If you're traveling for business or pleasure or whatever it is, oh, I'm going to go take out I got a conference in L.A. and now I got to go all the way back to, you're not taking a little extra day to check out St. Louis. Let's be honest here. But let me ask you this. Is St. Louis a hip place to be? You see, St. Louis is really hip. Look at me. Am I a hip guy? Am I as hip as St. Louis, or is St. Louis hipper than me? Pretty hip, I know. I don't see St. Louis as really a hip place, honestly. I like St. Louis. I mean, there's so many great things here. Don't try to twist my words in this, but I don't think St. Louis is like hip. I just think St. Louis is just a cool city. It's not like hip. You know, when I think of hip, this is what I think of. I think of hip as, oh, you're over on the West Coast, you're visiting Portland, and some dude with a handlebar mustache finds a way to hand you, oh, we just decided to deep fry a pickle, and then we put it in pancake batter, and then we served it as a breakfast food. That's hip, right? You're like, oh, wow, that's really hip. That must be really cool. This is what I like about St. Louis. You don't see people walking around in, like, flannel and the biggest of all the fashion trends and things like that. We're like a hardworking type of people. Like, it gets cold here, and we don't mess around. That, you know, when I think of hip, I think you're doing all of this, like, all of these things that are totally unnecessary, right? You're like, okay, they don't have to wear shoes like that. They don't have to wear jeans that tight. They don't have to wear a fedora over there. Like, you know, enough with the flannel. I get it. You know, we're not trying to force it. Like, these places that are hip, they force it. We're just like a hardworking group of people. And when we want to go to the zoo, we don't want to pay for it. That's what St. Louis is about. Yeah. Oh, I'm going to go to Forest Park and check out the zoo, Science Center, something like that. I'm going to take the kids over to Grant's Farm, or, you know, I'm going to go check this out. Or, hey, you got the aquarium open, right? To me, hip's like, I'm going to go down to the park and play hacky sack, ironically, because, you know, then I'll play some Mario music from the 1990s off of a Nintendo MIDI player or something. That's what I think of as hip. They're like forcing it to the sake of being. St. Louis isn't like that. Ain't nobody got time for people like that. We're too busy working. We're too hard working here. This is Overnight America, KMOX.
Now back to Overnight America on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
I am so hip. I'm so hip. Yikes. Not really. You know, just a general thought. I wasn't really going to do a segment on this, but just a general thought. Has anyone ever kept a New Year's resolution? I don't think anyone's ever kept it. In the history of New Year's resolutions, I would say less than 1% are kept. I am going to wager that most people listening right now who have made a New Year resolution has never kept it. Just saying. So the big news that's happened just in the last couple of hours, a U.S. airstrike has killed an Iranian military general. You'll hear more with CBS News at the top of the hour. Cammie McCormick, we'll check in with her in just a second. But the attack centered on the Baghdad International Airport took out a deputy commander of the Iranian-backed militia group in Iraq known as the Popular Mobilization Forces. Now, that was a terrorist organization. And I want to play this for you real quick from CBS News.
The Pentagon says at the direction of President Trump, the military took a decisive defensive action to protect U.S. personnel abroad by killing Soleimani. It said he was actively developing plans to attack American diplomats and service members in Iraq and throughout the region. And he and his Al-Quds force were responsible for the deaths of hundreds of American service members and the wounding of thousands more. It went on to say he was behind the attacks on coalition bases in Iraq over the last several months.
So this is good for President Trump, and this is a good move. And you can go back to the way we handled Benghazi on September 11th, 2011. I can't remember the exact year. I'm sorry. But when our delegation was attacked and ultimately lives were lost, and you go back and you saw under the helm of Hillary Clinton the way they decided to handle it, which was by allowing it to happen and continue to happen, by not sending forces for reinforcement. And it was such a terrifying way that the United States would handle it that way under the Obama administration. It wasn't that much of a surprise. They could have been harder on certain things. You know, they're a big fan of drone strikes, man. If there was a hospital out there, man, they were considering drone striking it. I mean, that's the legacy of the Obama administration when it came to special forces. Okay, he did kill Osama bin Laden. You can give him that. But Donald Trump comes in, it's a whole different story. We see that our embassy is being attacked, and you see that it is being, you know, people are forcefully trying to get into it, and it could escalate into some pretty serious violence. And what happens? President Trump sends several hundred additional forces out there to help protect the embassy. Completely different the way that they handled one in Benghazi and the other. So you also see the way that some of these Iranian terrorist groups and their military forces have been facing the United States over the last couple of years. Certainly has been escalated over the last year. Elevated, probably maybe a better word. The tensions continue to be there. You're at a crossroads. So you can take the Obama way, which is let's just throw money at them. Let's see if we can drop a ton of cash their way. And if we could just pay them off to be good and kind, then they'll just go away, right? Because, you know, they know it's better for us to be financially supporting them than it would be for them to be attacking us. Well, we found that didn't work. President Trump comes in there, he handles it a different way, which is, okay, if you're going to do this and you're going to be threatening us with force, guess what? Someone's in town that's going to push back, and that's what you're seeing. I don't know what this is going to lead to. Every time I've made a prediction, and I'm not great at these predictions. I'm actually pretty terrible at these predictions. But every time I made a prediction, I get some of them right, but not a lot of them. And you can look at these and say, okay, this could be the thing that could escalate them to the next level. A lot of times I wonder if President Trump is just waiting for him to show off how much money he's put back into our military forces, reinvesting into it to show that we're not afraid anymore. I think sometimes you got to be able to stand your ground, stand up strong and tall and say, you know, if we're going to get pushed, they got to expect to be pushed back. Maybe that's how you get them to stop. And that's not a bad way to handle it. I think President Trump is doing, if this is something that he directed, good for him. And if you go onto his Twitter page right now, he posted one thing. It's a picture of the American flag. I like that. So we're going to check in with CBS News at the top of the hour, get the latest from that. What else do I got here? You know, it's the last show of the week. And since it's really my first show back, if there's something that happened over the last couple of weeks, we can certainly talk about that. But we will have some open phone lines for you at 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Kevin Colleen did a great job with this whole nother story, because it's weird when you walk back into the building after being off on a few days, you're disoriented. You're like, oh yeah, I remember what this was like. And you think everything's going to be all hunky-dory, and you realize very quickly it's not. It's just back to the way it was before. Here's Kevin Colleen's whole nother story.
Ship ready, Consul.
Strike oars.
Strike oars!
Like Ben-Hur chained to that rowing crew in a Roman warship, we return to our jobs once again. The time off was great, but it's over. Oh, here comes the boss with a suggestion.
Attack speed!
Attack speed!
And so we get back to it. Rowing faster, drinking more coffee, going, going, going. This is no vacation anymore. Let me tell you about my vacation. I think I got a little rundown from rowing the boat too much before vacation and ended up napping on the couch a lot. This is actual audio of me that my daughter Emily recorded for posterity. And then, after many such naps,
so this is Christmas.
The family gathered around, the wrapping paper on the floor, lots of sweets, lots and lots of sugar. The only real excitement we had was my son Kevin gave me a toy gun, a plastic gun that shoots table salt at bugs. It's like a pump-action bug shotgun. I ventured down into the basement in my plaid bathrobe to go after the crickets. It was like Starship Troopers. Those basement crickets hopped away under the furnace and piles of laundry. I was blasting them with salt. It didn't kill them right away, but they almost now have high blood pressure from the experience. The rest of the time off for Christmas break was really wasted relaxing. I didn't do anything, any real rowing, until my first day back at work.
Ramming speed.
Ramming speed!
And just like that, we all got back into the rhythm of it. It reminded me of an obituary I saw for Don Schneeberger over the break. He was the owner of Vest Soda. It said Don never found solace in retirement. His restlessness led him to own and invest in businesses till the day of his passing.
Rest.
Don't tell our bosses this, but I think we're all addicted to rowing. For the whole of the story, I'm Kevin Killeen.
There's only one person that could put something like that together. His name is Kevin Killeen. I love it! That's his whole nother story. Does a great job with it. No, I enjoyed the last couple of weeks off. Really did. And I didn't feel bad about coming in here. I just felt like, oh, am I going to remember how to do this properly? It gave me a little bit of energy. I don't know. I read radio trade things, and I read a lot about what's going on in the industry. I've watched videos over the break. I tried to watch a couple of different talks when people were talking about radio. I read a radio book over the break as well, Game Changers Radio. Jay Mueller, who actually had in studio for an hour a couple of months. Well, yeah, November. He was here visiting his family, someone that lives in Australia, if you remember that conversation with Jay. If not, you can go listen to it at kmox.com/ONA. And I finally had a chance to read his book that came out in October, and they talked to different radio personalities. The interesting thing is, all of those people he talked about were primarily in Australia because that's where he's based out of. You know, he grew up here in St. Charles. His family lives in St. Charles. He went to school and interned a summer at KMOX, and then, you know, his soon-to-be, or I think maybe he was already married, wife decided, oh, let's go back to Australia. So he goes off to Australia and, you know, decides to stay there and live there, which is kind of cool. So we had a great conversation, and I've really enjoyed my time talking to him. But it really opened me up to some of the top personalities in other countries to get an idea of the things they were doing with their shows. And it's really fascinating to hear the way Australia handles their radio shows and how different they are from the United States. And it leads me with a lot of other questions, how sustainable the industry is there, how it's changed over the years, how the United States radio industry has changed over the years. Here in the United States, radio is in a weird place right now because when I was growing up, I grew up in Detroit. I listened to some of, you know, my favorite radio broadcasters. Much like you, if you were growing up here in St. Louis, you listened to Jack Buck and, you know, you listen to Jack Carney, you listen to Jim White, you listen to Bob Costas, you listen to some awesome, awesome, awesome radio presenters that were working for this radio station. It's just weird, the radio industry, the way it is today. They just don't generate stars like they used to. Those guys were stars. You don't see that in radio. Why is that? So I watch people talk about these sort of things. That's how I spent my last couple of weeks, playing with my kid, eating whenever I wanted to eat, having no responsibilities, and watching different radio people from other countries. Doesn't that sound like fun, doesn't it? No, doesn't sound like fun to anyone else? I enjoyed it. So, next couple of hours, let's keep the phone lines open. Let's keep things more flexible. You know, the last show of the week. What do you want to talk about? You tell me if there's something we didn't get to cover or something you want to cover. Let's do that. Ultimately, it's better for you to get it off your chest, get it off your mind. If you heard something I said that was really dumb and you want to say that too, you can. It's Overnight America, KMOX.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. You'll be glad you did.